Well, a quick time check just to help your commute just a little bit on the day before the public holiday here in South Africa, 7:44 a.m. You're listening to Sabah al-Muslim live right here on Radio Islam International. Well, up next, the Middle East Report this Friday. And joining us, as always, James M. Dorsey, an award-winning scholar, and he's, of course, a senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School at International Studies. That's, of course, based out in Singapore. And you can catch up with James and check some of his articles at www.jamesmdorsey.net and subscribe to the turbulent world of Middle East soccer. Good day to you, James.
Good morning. Pleasure to be with you as always.
And thank you for joining us, James. You know what? There's a big will he or won't we when it comes to the next move of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It's been a couple of weeks now that the Rafah offensive, which he has promised, which he has claimed, which the U.S. and the international community doesn't want him to even step in that area, at least from a ground offensive point of view. What's going to be the stance? I mean, does he feel that he have to? Will the U.S. And the lobby outside the state of Israel be strong enough to ensure that he doesn't? Where is he heading with the Rafah offensive, in your opinion, James?
Indeed, I thought it would be useful today on a number of crucial questions to ask, will he or won't he? And one of those first crucial questions is, of course, what's going to happen in Rafah? I think the answer is he will. Now, what I also think is that he, to a degree, appears to be bowing to U.S. pressure. So, in other words, not to launch a full-fledged ground offensive in the way they did in Khan Yunis and elsewhere, but for this to be more targeted. How that's going to play out remains to be seen. But one suggestion that's been discussed is that Israel would go from neighborhood to neighborhood and wipe out and attack, or first of all, remove civilians from those neighborhoods before it attacks. The reason why he will is that Netanyahu has a lot at stake in Rafah. What's at stake is the degree to which he will be able to claim a victory in now 7 months of Gaza war. Keep in mind that he had three objectives for the war. The third objective, the one that would ensure that Gaza no longer is a launching pad for resistance to Israeli occupation or the Israeli siege, in many ways has already failed. Because if you look at the north or other parts of Gaza where Israeli troops withdraw, Hamas reappears in a sort of whack-a-mole game, if you wish. His second objective, which is release of the hostages captured in the October 7 attack by Hamas and other Palestinians. Well, the mass of hostages that have been released have not been released through military action. They've been released through negotiations, indirect negotiations, between Hamas and Israel. And the third objective was to destroy Hamas. Well, up until now, Israel has not succeeded in taking, one, in destroying Hamas, but two, even if that's also of symbolic value, taking out Hamas's top Gaza leadership. And the assumption, both in the cases of the hostages and the top Hamas leadership, is that they are in tunnels under Rafah, and whether that's true or not, and whether or not Israel succeeds in getting them out of the tunnels, remains to be seen.
So the second question, of course, will he or won't he, James, is that Prime Minister Netanyahu continue to undermine the Qatar-mediated ceasefire and prisoner exchange negotiations. Qatar has played, obviously, a very, very vital role, not from now, but even prior to October 7th, as that one mediator that, consistently gets involved, has some level of trust and respect, definitely from Hamas, but even from the Israeli and certainly from the Israeli allies' point of view, the Americans, etc. They themselves have complained in recent weeks that they felt abused, you know, by the didn't exactly come out and say Mr. Netanyahu, but the assumption is by the Israeli authorities, and who knows, even by Hamas himself. Will he continue to undermine the process, or will he look for another broker in trying to negotiate the release of the hostages?
Well, first of all, I think that one's got to split this question into two. One is, will he? Well, we'll see. You had a war cabinet meeting yesterday, Israeli war cabinet meeting, in which the negotiating team was authorized to continue the negotiations. And in fact, you have an Egyptian delegation visiting Israel today, if I'm not incorrect, to further discuss those negotiations. That's the narrow scope. And Netanyahu is under a lot of pressure to both domestic and internationally to come to an arrangement with Hamas with regard to the hostages. To be fair, so is Hamas. But there's also a broader perspective, perspective to this. What prompted the Qatari prime minister to all but in name accuse Netanyahu and Israel of undermining those talks was that Israel's been operating on two tracks. One track has been negotiations, in which it took a fairly hard line until now. The other track was to try and undermine Qatar in an attempt to force Qatar to use leverage that it may or may not have over Hamas and to expel Hamas officials and negotiators from Qatar. And that pressure did not come just from Israel, but it came from also from members of the U.S. Congress. And that was a real threat to Qatar's foreign relations, particularly its very close relationship with the United States. I think that, you know, at this point, Netanyahu has to be seen to be negotiating in good faith, even if I would suspect that he does not want a ceasefire until after the Rafah operation, and we know how that is, whether or not Israel succeeds in that operation.
Moving on, of course, staying in the region, James, U.S. Secretary Anthony Blinken will reportedly touch down this weekend in Saudi Arabia. And, you know, another will he or won't he question is whether Prime Minister Netanyahu will be seduced by the prospect of a diplomatic relations, or I wouldn't want to say, of course, recognition, but stronger diplomatic relations with Saudi Arabia, and in turn make some concessions on the Palestinian issue. I'm sure that this will be seen as some sort of a feather in the cap of the Israelis if they can establish maybe even a diplomatic mission in Saudi Arabia and vice versa for that matter when it comes to their acknowledgement in the region. But how do you see Secretary Blinken's visit go down, which the reported visit going down this weekend?
Well, let's be first clear. We are talking about recognition. Establishment of diplomatic relations is recognition. What the Americans are, and they're divided on this within the administration, but what the Americans are banking on is that Netanyahu does not want to go down in history as having failed to prevent the October 7 attack and having failed to achieve his war objectives in the war in Gaza, and that therefore, and he's always been extremely strong on the notion that he wants diplomatic relations with Saudi Arabia. That's the crown jewel, in a sense. And if you have Saudi Arabia, you probably have much of the Muslim world that will follow suit. So Blinken, who's in China today, will be going from China to Saudi Arabia, in which he's trying to entice the Saudis. And the Saudis have said they are interested in a multi-pronged Middle East deal. that would involve legally binding U.S. guarantees for Saudi defense, U.S. support of a peaceful Saudi nuclear program, and recognition of Israel and establishment of diplomatic relations. What has changed is the Gaza war. So prior to the Gaza war, Saudi Arabia really was on the verge of concluding that deal with essentially a fig leaf for the Palestinian issue. Fig leaves are no longer good enough. Saudi Arabia is still interested in that deal, but it wants, and it said so very clearly, a credible, irreversible pathway to a resolution of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict with the establishment of an independent Palestinian state. And so for Netanyahu, the choice is going to be, is he so enticed by that deal that he's willing to go against his coalition partners, or will he feel that the threat of his government falling and him not being able to return to government is greater than the advantage of having diplomatic relations with Israel?
James, finally, another will he or won't he question for Mr. Netanyahu. Read the message regarding the resignation of Aharon Khalifa. Now, this is Israel's military intelligence officer who took responsibility for the intelligence failure and that resulted in Israel not being able to counter, well, this is according to them, of course, the October 7th attacks on Israel. He has, in the last few days, fallen on his sword by resigning, recall that he has been, in fact, appointed by the administration, and he at one time would have been, and maybe still is, Mr. Netanyahu's favorite intelligence officer. Will he read his resignation in public or not?
Well, first of all, he was the head of military intelligence. I don't know that he was Netanyahu's favorite. Netanyahu has been much closer and has been utilizing David Barnea, the head of the Mossad, as well as the head of Shin Bet, more than they have been utilizing Khalifa in the, for example, the negotiations for a ceasefire. But nonetheless, multiple Israeli politicians, cabinet officials, as well as military and intelligence officials, have publicly taken responsibility for the intelligence failure. None of them have resigned. What makes Khalifa important is he's the first one to have resigned. Most of those resignations are really expected once the war ends. The only official who has not accepted public responsibility is Netanyahu. And I think the answer to the question is he's not going to follow Khalifa's example. Netanyahu has always said, yes, there has to be an inquiry. Yes, there has to be accountability, but only after the Gulf, after the war ends. And he has sought to put the blame on military officials and intelligence officials rather than to take account of his own responsibility, because it's with Netanyahu that the buck stops. So I don't think he's going to be follow that example. The question is whether others will. It's early days. We haven't seen that yet.
James Dorsey, thank you for joining us on Radio Islam International. As always, thank you for your time and your insights, James, and have a good weekend ahead of you.
Thank you for having me, and have a happy holiday.